Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Horror Weekly, Civil War. Oh my God, I did not expect to be here doing this. I had promised, due to a lot of requests from the Horror Weekly community, to kind of revisit Twin Peaks The Return, which I will be doing shortly. I'm planning for this to be a mini episode, mainly because I fucking hated Civil War and I don't want to spend a full hour getting angrier and angrier. So I'll try to drop another episode this weekend. But if Twin Peaks The Return ends up being too large, I'm not even through my rewatch yet. I'm on part 16. Then it'll definitely be next week. So this is also a little weird for me because I've never just gone at a movie on this podcast before. And I realized it's because of you all. Like, collectively, the Horror Weekly community has such good taste that a lot of times, because the podcast episodes are built off of polling the community, you steer me the right way. This wasn't a poll. I just saw it. And because, so this podcast basically is built on two things. It's us, the community, making a podcast together, which is why there's a lot of polling and questions to the groups and the pages. But it's also about being passionate about horror, about movie going, about art. And I haven't been this aggravated by a movie in a long time. And I think, despite the fact that I don't want to go negative on movies naturally, the ethic of the podcast is, when you're really passionate about something, speak on it. So I'm gonna give this a shot. There will obviously be spoilers. And oh, I should mention, just by way of background, another reason I'm surprised to be here is I don't really like trailers. I don't watch them to make decisions to see movies or how I'm going to feel about movies. I find trailers very deceptive. I think trailers have very little to do with the people who make the movie. I watch them for marketing because I do digital marketing as a job. So I'm fascinated by how movies are marketed, but they're almost like a separate category to me, where they don't really touch the movie proper. I can't remember a single time a trailer has either persuaded me or dissuaded me from watching a movie, either way, however I was tending. So the trailer didn't mean much to me, but I am a huge fan of Ex Machina, which is also by the director of this movie, Alex Garland. And I respect what Alex Garland was doing in Annihilation. And I find it enjoyable in a lot of ways. It has authentically scary moments, which like is few and far between in horror movies. See The Bear in Annihilation for one example. It's also daring, which, you know, a lot of horror movies are formulaic, and Annihilation certainly wasn't. Annihilation really is in like this weird micro genre. Like, I don't know. I would describe it, I guess, like movies that force you to have too many edibles and then show you a dystopian future. I'm an enormous fan of the movie The Endless, which Annihilation reminded me of that movie, or vice versa. I don't remember which order I saw them in. And I love The Endless, so I was predisposed to give Annihilation a chance. So because I wasn't like making a judgment based on the trailer, and because I liked the Alex Garland movies I've seen, in some cases like Ex Machina loved, I expected to really like Civil War at worst. If you don't know, Civil War is set in a near American future. It follows a team of journalists traveling across the United States during a civil war that has engulfed the nation. The cast includes Kirsten Dunst, Kaylee Spaney, Wagner Moura, Jesse Plemons, Nick Offerman, a bunch of other good actors. Okay, but let's get to it. So the thing that I hate most, and there are things that I like in Civil War, and I'll get to that, but the thing that I hated most that made me bristle with anger is the dialogue in this movie. It is so horrendously on the nose. And I have no pretensions of ever being a movie writer. I've never once in my lifetime felt like I could write a screenplay or do whatever. So I like, this is not an urge that has ever touched me, but I honestly feel like I could write the dialogue to Civil War in a weekend. Oscar Wilde has a great quote. There's a couple, I'll paraphrase because I don't remember exactly. One of them is, "All bad poetry springs from genuine feeling." And there's another one that goes like, you know, bad poetry comes from feelings, but the worst poetry comes from sincerity. Civil War is so painfully sincere about what it's trying to say and do, but it's sincere in a way that's up its own ass. It's like the guidance counselor character from the movie Heathers, who like tries to make the whole school artificially deal with their grief really quickly and, you know, announces the regime of the new happiness and all the sharing or whatever. It's like Civil War was written by a depressed version of the hippie guidance counselor from Heathers. And as I was sitting in the theater thinking to myself that if there's one more scene where the dialogue is this corny and ham-handed, I'm just going to walk out. Although I didn't, thinking of my duties here, I was starting to remember the fact that the trailer kind of gives away some of this game. So if you think about a trailer, like if you had been in charge of making the trailer for John Carpenter's Halloween, what would you have put in it? Like what images would you have shown? How would you have built it? And instantly, I realized that a really good trailer, forget about giving away. Let's just say you're trying to make the greatest trailer ever made for this movie, right? Without regards to, like, I mean, you're not trying to spoil everything, but, like, you're not afraid, right? What's going to be in that trailer? Well, there's going to be so much great dialogue. There's going to be the, he had the blackest eyes, he had the devil's eyes. There's going to be, it was the boogeyman. It's going to be, death has come to your little town, sheriff. It's going to be, it's Halloween, everyone's entitled to one good scare. A lot of this stuff is going to be there. And that's actual things that the people in the movie are saying to each other that are organic to their characters. Now, if you go back and you look at the Civil War trailer, it's a bunch of like patriotic nonsense. It's Nick Offerman's character saying, "I pledge allegiance to the flag." It's journalists telling, you know, what's happening, like, you know, Western forces are on the move, like whatever. And then it's the Jesse Plemons scene, which is by miles the best scene in the movie and the best written scene in the movie. But there's no other dialogue. Almost no other dialogue from any other characters. Anything that they're saying to each other is not in there. It's TV announcements and it's Nick Offerman, you know, doing propaganda. And sure, there might be a lot of explanations for why that is. The movie fancies itself as a really deep take on journalism and photojournalism. So, you know, maybe they wanted to give it like a documentary feel. That's fine. But if they had wanted to put dialogue from their own movie in the trailer, besides the Jesse Plemons scene, I don't know what they would pick because it's all bad. So maybe they were super smart not to have any dialogue, anything that the characters are saying to each other. Oh, except for the other scene, which again, like it's the scene where the whole crew walks into the clothing store and Joel is watching incredulously as the clerk is like, "Hi, welcome to the store. Let me know if you want to try some clothes on, you know, like whatever." And he's like, "You know, there's a big civil war going on, right?" And she's like, "Yeah, we know. But, you know, we're trying to stay out of it." I mean, if that is, that's like the second best dialogue in the movie. And that's pretty awful already. And I think the thing that pissed me off the most is, you know, the characters are constantly just saying the quiet part out loud. They're just trying to tell you what the movie is trying to message just right on the surface, right? So, like, when Lee, the Kirsten Dunst character, is, like clutched onto by Jesse, who is like a young girl who wants to be a photojournalist, who idolizes the great photojournalists like Lee. She wants to be, you know, wants to have the same career path. There's a scene where they're sitting together and Jesse is developing film in a really interesting way, actually. And, you know, they're just sitting there and, you know, if you were the screenwriter, you might think to yourself, all right, well, I've got these two characters sitting here. What I should probably use this time for is to get some backstory from Lee so that we get to know her character and care about her character. And there's a lot of ways you could do that, right? And that would be a thought that a screenwriter would have about what they should do to that, with that scene. But what they decide to do is just say that out loud. Like, Jesse literally turns to her and goes, well, I mean, we got time to kill, so why don't you tell me all about your past? It's like we're in the room with the screenwriter going, I have these two characters sitting here. I've got time to kill. Maybe I should get one of them to talk about their past. Like, the movie is just talking in screenwriter speak. And Civil War narrates its own meaning to us so surface, so on the nose, so corny, so often, it's offensive, frankly. And, you know, there's so many elegant ways to do this, right? Like, one of my favorite examples is the narration scene that happens in Shawshank Redemption when Morgan Freeman is telling the story about how Tim Robbins has escaped from Shawshank. And he says things like, you know, he would walk out in the yard and empty pieces of the wall, you know, through the cuff of his pants into the yard. And he says things like, he walks into a bank, a man that no one's ever seen before, and withdraws money. And the movie shows us how controlled and strategic and polished Tim Robbins is at doing this. And he's really pulling this off, right? And, you know, at the end, he's like, Morgan Freeman is like, I'd like to think the last thing that went through the warden's mind besides the bullet was how the hell Andy Dufresne got the better of him. Now, what this kind of sequence is really about is it's about the strength of character it takes to actually be free. Brooks didn't, I mean, it's not, maybe the strength of the character is too judgmental, but like, Brooks broke and didn't have it anymore. Andy was never going to break, right? Like, he always had it. And it's if you're not free, like if you have no hope of freedom, you can either break inside yourself and become completely resigned to whatever, or you can plan or plot or fight back in some way, right? But notice that Morgan Freeman never says that. What he does is he's just telling us what is happening in using his tone, the joy in his voice at narrating Andy's grand plan to get free. It's like an anthem of freedom. You can hear it in his voice, but they're not saying it directly to you. Civil War never does this, right? It never just tells you what is happening or what you're seeing. It also insists on telling you what the people making the movie think this scene means. Of course, we've got the young, hotshot, wannabe photojournalist hanging out with Lee and taking chances. And then the people who are friends with Lee are like, guess who that reminds us of when you were her age? Like, wah-wah. Yeah, of course, Lee was just like that. Of course, Jesse is going to be the successor. Like, we see it a mile off. And, you know, I actually really like a lot of the visuals in this movie. Alex Garland is a really good visual director, although some of them are just, you know, they're just there because he knows they're great visuals, but he's not even really making a pretense to make it feel realistic. Like anyone who's driven through a forest fire or seen video of people going through a forest fire know that it doesn't look like some kind of magical Disney moment. But I mean, I'll give him that. Like the visual was so good. So I didn't mind a lot of the story elements. I loved a lot of the visuals. But it's not just the dialogue. It's first of all, there's the fucking dumb map. We'll get to that in a second. But the story isn't perfect. It's not just the dialogue dragging this movie down. I'll give you an example. So, and again, huge spoilers all the way through. So Lee's mentor, Sammy, who's a really likable character, is, you know, he's the wise old journalist. There's basically three generations of journalists being represented here. So, you know, whatever. But Sammy represents an old style of journalism that's passing away. Things are getting converted to a new way of doing journalism. And he knows it. He knows that he's a dinosaur. He knows that his style of journalism is going away. So, of course, what happens in the movie, he has to sacrifice himself to save the new journalism, to save the evolution of journalism. And he dies in the best sequence of the movie, which is the Jesse Plemons sequence. Of course, because this movie is badly written, before that scene really gets underway, he turns to the other characters in the movie and says, "There's death here. If we go there, we're going to die. There's death in this scene." And yeah, it shows his wisdom, but oh my God, he's just saying the thing, right? So he comes charging in with his car, knocks the bad guys out of the way, you know, rescues the team, and then dies for his trouble. Old journalism, you know, gives way to the new journalism. Fine. I mean, it was in the best scene. It's a good actor. So even though it was really on the nose, I'll take it. But guess what? The movie likes this move so much, it does it again. The exact same fucking thing. Kirsten Dunst has to sacrifice herself. The middle journalist, not even the old journalist, the middle journalist, sacrifice herself to foster the new journalism. The young journalist. You already did this move. This would be like Wes Craven putting two exploding bloodbed scenes in Nightmare on Elm Street. And nothing about this climactic scene makes sense. It turns Lee, a character that we believed was intelligent, into a complete fucking idiot because she sees Jesse standing in the middle of a corridor in the White House. The White House, by the way, is getting taken over by a team of, I don't know, less than 12 people. This Civil War is severely undermanned. Even though we haven't heard about any kind of mass casualties anywhere, the White House, which should be able to muster tens of thousands of soldiers in its own defense, has nothing. And the people assaulting it are assaulting the actual White House with a team of, you know, like a dozen or so, whatever. And meanwhile, like, why are you bothering? Clearly, the president is in the nuclear bunker. The president would be running the show from the securest place on earth. There's no way he's just wandering around, like hanging out in the Oval Office, ruffling through his desk while the White House is being invaded, knowing that the people are coming there to kill him, right? Wait a minute. Yeah, that's exactly what he's doing. Who cares about I have a bunker? Let's just like walk around the White House totally exposed. That's fine. I'm Nick Offerman. I'm also an idiot. Everyone in this movie is an idiot. So, but Jesse's exposed in the corridor. Lee, you know, like slow-mo style, runs out. Honestly, a lot of this plays out like Team America. So, I mean, maybe that's the only good thing about this movie is it was reminding me of a much better film. But she reaches up. She dives over to knock Jesse down. Now, why is she knocking Jesse down? Why is she knocking Jesse flat? Because she knows standing upright in the middle of the corridor is a bad plan. So if you were, think about this, if you were someone who saw someone that you wanted to save standing upright in a corridor where you knew they were going to get shot, and your only choice was to dive, what would you do? You dive, knock them down, fall down with them, cover them with your body, but at least on the ground, on the floor, prone, right? Now, not the way that Kirsten Dunst plays it. She knocks Jesse out of the position of danger, standing in the middle of the corridor, and then stands in the middle of the corridor. Because the movie needs her to get shot at this point. And the movie needs Jesse to have a vantage point to take the picture of her friend, her new mentor, her idol, getting shot above her to show that she's now a soulless new journalist. We take the pictures so other people can ask the questions, as the movie says. She can't take a great photo if they're both lying on the floor. So, of course, Kirsten Dunst has to stand upright in the middle of the fucking hallway like a dumbass. Because the movie needs it. This movie doesn't care about plausibility or blocking or us or not betraying its own characters from being smart in one scene to being really ridiculously dumb in the next scene. It wants to make visuals and it wants to make a message, and it's going to sacrifice everything to do those two things. And that's fundamentally what I hate about this movie. Take the ridiculous map where Texas and California have unified. I even saw an interview where Alex Garland tried to explain why he made this choice, and I still don't know why he made the choice. His explanation didn't even make any sense. But I think I got where he was headed with his explanation, which was he doesn't want this movie to be politically polarizing. See, here's the trick. This movie is not about civil war. It's not about politics. It's not about tensions between groups. This is a movie about photojournalism. And he knew a movie called Photojournalist would sell two tickets. So he called the movie Civil War and gave it a Civil War background where not much makes sense about what's happening. But who cares? Because it's a movie about photojournalists and it's an excuse for me to make amazing visuals. So we're given this absurd map where somehow Texas and California have combined forces because they're concerned about a dictator president. Meanwhile, there are dozens of states who haven't joined them, who apparently, I guess, don't care about a dictator president, who only Texas and California were smart enough to put their political differences aside to fight against this notion. I mean, I guess there's other, you know, blocks, but like they're all fighting each other. So they, even though they agree on the reason, for some reason they're disagreeing with each other. Who knows? But what Alex Garland needed was he needed a red state and a blue state to combine so that when people came at him after the movie was released or when viewers were sitting in the seats in the theater, they would have to be like, according to Alex Garland, oh, I guess it's not about ideological problems. I guess it's just the country's falling apart. I mean, it's not even about, you know, blue and red because they're working together. Like, who knows what it's about? It's about, you know, dictatorship. Psst, it's about photojournalism. So he makes this incredibly stupid decision about this map because he thinks his movie needs it. Again, all bad poetry is sincere. And what are we supposed to make of the ascendancy of Jesse? Jesse is basically, at the end of this movie, Jake Gyllenhaal's character from Nightcrawler. She's a sociopath. She's just taking photos. She's getting people. She's doing reckless things that are getting other people in harm's way, getting other people killed. As far as I'm aware, like, sure, journalists are supposed to be dispassionate and objective in a sense. I'm not sure for sure they're supposed to get each other killed. She and Joel are like laughing it up when, you know, things are going wrong. And of course, again, the movie's going to tell us in the corniest way possible where Jesse will sit down after her first like big experience with the Jesse Plemons scene where she's really scared. And afterwards, she has to turn to someone and go, I was really scared, but I've also never felt more alive. Great. So I guess journalists are supposed to be adrenaline junkie sociopaths. I mean, I'm open to the idea that you need a streak of that, But of course, because this movie has no subtlety, it just converts her to 100% version, amped up version of this, which, by the way, if you were a photojournalist that worked this way, you wouldn't have much of a photojournalism career because you and everyone around you would get killed in months. But they had done a good job of making us feel sympathetic towards Jesse, rooting for someone to learn her craft, survive some horrendous situations, maybe become a better version of Lee, right? But that's not what that's not where they take her character, right? This would be like if you filmed the first Rocky movie and then you had Rocky, you know, fighting in the end scene and in the last round, pulling a hammer out of his trunks that he was hiding there and beating Apollo Creed to death with it. Like, what lesson are we supposed to learn from this victory? And of course, the movie telegraphed to us that this was going to happen from the very beginning, where they have, of course, an incredibly obvious scene where Kirsten Dunst is talking to Jesse and saying, you know, if you get shot, if you're lying bleeding out on the floor, should I take the picture? Or do you think I would take the picture? And Jesse's like, I don't know, would you? And Kirsten Dunst smirks and goes, what do you think? So we know one of them is going to die. We know one of them is going to get the choice whether to take the photo or not. And of course they're going to, because the answer to what do you think was yes. Now, there might be a tiny bit of nuance, to be fair, snuck into this structure, because Lee does delete the photo of Sammy dead from her phone. So maybe she has evolved into the kind of person that, even if she will take the photo, isn't going to keep it or isn't going to put it in the story. And maybe this is a lesson that Jesse, who clearly is not going to survive much longer, if by some miracle survived decades further into her career, maybe it's a lesson that someday she will come to learn. And that would be great if that's what it meant. I'm not sure how to trust this movie to have any level of nuance at all. But I'm just trying to be fair. But even if that was true, the absurd way they dropped the concept straight into the movie by just telling it to us, you know, what if one of us is lying dead on the floor? Should we take the picture? Yes or no? Check box yes or box no. And then immediately give us that scene at the end is again, I'm sorry, lazy. And then we get the V for Vendetta ending. And V for Vendetta actually was smart enough when it disposed of the John Hurt character when he's on TV and also simultaneously being, you know, killed. And then as he's being killed, I forget the other character's name, who's there, goes disgusting, right? Like, that's not the climax of the movie. They're smart enough to know that that is not strong enough to be the nail that you hang the movie on. But of course, we get Nick Offerman being the disgusting John Hurt character, begging for his life, giving an inane quote to the journalist. And then the photo developing over the credits of the dead president on the ground, which in a better movie is 10 minutes before the climax, of course, is the last thing this movie decides to give us. And then you've got all these soldiers posing with the dead president, Abu Ghraib style, as the photo gets clearer and clearer. And it was I almost tore my own head off in the theater. I'm glad that I'm not capable of that level of self-harm. I hate everything about this. Like, because it has the cadence of a punchline. And it turns the movie that came before it into a joke. That, like, whitewash moment from Jesse and then the slowly developing photograph. The profound way to do that is the movie Repulsion. The shallowest possible way to do this is Civil War. Now, I'm going to bring this hate fest to a close with some shafts of light, okay? I honestly wouldn't be mad at someone telling me that they enjoyed this movie. I would severely disagree with them, but I wouldn't be upset. There are movies where, if you came to me and you were like, I authentically enjoyed, you know, Paul Blart Mall Cop or whatever, I'd be like, oh my God. But if you came to me and told me you enjoyed Civil War, I get it. I mean, it has some great visuals. There are some great set pieces. The Jesse Plemons sequence is amazing. It's really well done. I think one reason that it works so well is it requires no real writing. It requires a good concept. The concept is, what kind of American are you? Which is a chilling question to ask. And then shooting the people who give you the wrong answers. But all you have to do to write that is ask the question and then list off places. Colorado, Florida, Hong Kong, right? Like, this isn't Shakespeare. It's very telling to me that the best scene in the movie requires the writing of a question, then a list of geographical points. And the thing that carries it is incredible acting and the fact that the setup of it with the bodies and the lime being thrown on them and the incredible acting from Jesse Plemons, not to mention the rest of the cast. I'm not mad at the cast. They're all good actors. The military scenes, whether it's in the military camp or the final assault on the White House, even though it's absurdly minimal, is really cool visually. The firing of the guns from the underbelly of helicopters that somehow look like bullets and lasers simultaneously. Like, a lot of the visuals are, Alex Garland has an amazing eye. So if you just get into it because you really like dystopian movies, you're the kind of person who loved The Road, so you're into that, you really like the visuals, you're carried along by the concept of a road trip movie through a war, or, I don't know, you're a budding photojournalist, like any of these reasons or more, a lot of others I couldn't think of, I wouldn't be upset if you enjoyed the movie. It has some things to give people. I just have a particular aversion to what comes across to me as incredibly lazy writing. And I'm not making an accusation. I'm not saying they were lazy. I'm sure they busted their ass on this movie like most people who make movies do and work. And I'm sure this movie wasn't like I'm almost sure this wasn't a cash grab of some kind. Again, my thesis is that it's a really sincere movie with a really shallow message that it thinks is deep. I mean lazy in a deeper sense, which is if there was a DraftKings app for betting on movies while you were watching them, and there was a category of, will the character say the absolutely most obvious thing that a character could say to tell us what this scene is supposed to mean, I would be a multimillionaire betting against this movie. Okay, that's it. I can't take any more. I would love to be talked out of this because I don't want to go backwards in my mind and start hating Ex Machina and Annihilation and second guessing like my feelings for those. If someone can fight for this movie, make a defense against how I'm taking this movie, I'd love to hear it. Message the Horror Weekly page. Tell us in the group. Tell us in the subscriber group where I'm sure to see it, where I'm not, bombarded by the like I mentioned before, the page. Literally, you have the spam messages that this page gets from people who are like, we'll pay you $12,000 to advertise on the page, or we want to talk to you about our horror, 5-minute horror project about, clowns that sodomize each other, whatever. Like it's, and just like literally the hi there, hi from wherever messages. It takes a lot to sort through. So you can message it. If it's got verbiage to it, I'm more likely to see it. I'm definitely going to see it if it's in our subscriber group. I'll put a link in the show notes. That's how you can directly support the podcast. And in this particular case, do something good for my mental health, because I was really questioning why I do this while I was sitting in the theater thinking I could have walked out an hour ago. And speaking of the supporter group, I got all your comments and suggestions for Twin Peaks, The Return, and how I should format the episode. They were so thoughtful and intelligent and nice. God, I'm so lucky that this community exists. So thank you so much for that. I will get to that as soon as possible. Much happy. Well, we're going to move to much happier grounds when we say hello to Twin Peaks The Return. So until maybe the weekend, or certainly by next Thursday, have yourself a great horror week.